Mr. Page, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today about the history of the Vernon Museum. Perhaps let's start with yourself. What's your background in the history of museums and archives, and how did you get involved with the Vernon Museum?
Well, I studied architecture at Cornell and then came to British Columbia eventually and was working in architecture until the 1980s. There was a major recession and I got a job. There was no architectural work here in Vernon at all, but I got a job on a grant to design and build cases for the Vernon Museum. I had had a job just previous to that with the Vancouver Art Gallery as a traveling curator. So I would curate a show and then take it on the road and travel around the province with it. And then this job in the Vernon Museum came up, and as a designer, I could design cases in harmony with the existing architecture, which was quite beautiful. I got the work done before the grant money was gone, and they said, well, why don't you do the first exhibits in them? So I did that, and they were exhibits about First Nations topics that I chose to do. And this was in 1984. Well, life went on. I decided, hey, in this museum world, I can both design and build and educate. And I had been doing each of those things in separate realms all on the same day throughout life for a number of years. I was involved in education, musical education, and craft and design work. I would build things for people, and then I did architectural design. Well, the first job was building cases for the Vernon Museum. That led to other things, and eventually I ended up becoming a designer for the Grist Mill Historic Site at Carameas. Once again, the money was done on the design and build contract for the exhibits, and I got a phone call that said, from the province, it said, we have extra money in the budget. Would you like to be the manager for the first year? So I jumped at the chance to do that because then I could evaluate, which I'd learned about through taking museum courses. And I noticed that evaluation was rarely actually budgeted for or practiced, except in very small, minor ways, but not in the ways that I'd learned through academic study as possible. Well, here was a chance to live with the things I just designed and built and then evaluate visitor response and tune them up. Well, that led into an 18-year career at the Grist Mill as the manager of it. And it built up, and eventually we had a staff of 15, and it was being listed as one of the top 10 things to see and do in British Columbia in international magazines and journals. And so then I ended up also taking on a job at the Kamloops Museum as curator, and was there for 7 years and doing both, running the historic site and being the curator at Kamloops. I reached retirement age and had to stop at Kamloops. 2 days after, I got an invitation to go to Victoria and become curator of Craigflower Historic Site, which was farmhouse and school from the Hudson Bay post era, and loved it. And in Victoria, ended up being curator of the Maritime Museum for a couple of years. And also there was an opportunity to work in exhibits at the Provincial Museum for a year and a half, which I did.
And what brought you back to Vernon, to the Vernon Museum?
Over the years, I've always had an affection for Vernon, and jobs began to open up here. So the Science Center they had a 6-month contract to do exhibits and retool the Science Center. So I did that. And then a job opened up at the Vernon Museum as curator. So I applied, and what's interesting is the same cases that I built in 1984 and the exhibits that are in them are the same ones that are still there today untouched, and yet life has moved along. And it's not that the exhibits are irrelevant today, it's just we have a different relationship today with the Indigenous community. And so I'm working with elders in redeveloping the entire First Nations area in the museum.
What are the early foundations of the Vernon Museum? How did it begin? And maybe chart some of the ways that it's changed over the years.
It began, as I understand it, in the 1950s with a man named C.W. Pound, who was a taxidermist. And he wanted to donate in his taxidermy and create a museum around it. I'm not quite sure of the personal motivations, if he wanted to see it be a museum or if he was looking for an outing or there were friends who said, oh, we should make a museum of it. So I still have to learn. And this taxidermy collection is spectacular. So we have a special gallery that had been built together many years ago with showing off his collection. And it was referred to as the Nature Gallery. So at the moment, I'm redeveloping that to be a more inclusive nature gallery about other aspects of nature, and doing it in a children's museum format. So over the years, the museum started with the taxidermy collection. And as I understand it, there were keen people who wanted to preserve history, quite often from some of the upscale homes who wanted to see their upscale accomplishments celebrated. They became largely the people who were board members and presidents, and they had a love of history because it was personal to their families, and they could bring that to play. In more recent years, well, the museum, as many places, started in a small building, and then in the 1960s, it wasn't that old at that time, a whole new civic complex was built in Vernon. The city purchased two complete blocks of land, and on that put the city hall, the police station, the fire station, the library, the administrative offices, and the museum, and the art gallery as well at that time. So there was a unified design for this civic complex that included gardens and outdoor spaces. It's beautifully, beautifully designed, and as relevant today as it was in the 1960s. It looks modern. The museum was new in the 1960s and had a lovely facility. There was a curator who was hired at that time who was a keen manager of information and created what today would be a database. In his day, it was card files. All the collection information, and it was his, he was dedicated to preserving information. And so the museum had him for a couple of decades. And so a lot was accomplished there. And then when it came to the computer era, after he retired, it's easy to take the card files and enter information in a database. So the museum has moved on from his era. And I have to say, my introduction to the museum during his era, he was a charming man who was very private, and but not hostile in any way, but he was quite charming once you got to talk with him a bit. But they had a great roll-top desk just inside the door, and he would work hunched over at the roll-top desk, typing and doing his writing on cards. And he had a green visor that he would wear. And when you came in the door, he would look up. And so it wasn't a real invitation to the museum. He was, by quirk, he was protective of it in a sense. But that was my introduction to the museum. And then I came to realize as years went by that the work he had done, he indexed the newspapers, an enormous amount of archival reference work done by this gentleman over many years. So the museum benefits from all those things. The director after him was much more involved with public connection and activities. And she was not a museum person, but she was a small business person, but very community-minded. And so the museum began to be engaged in community activities of all sorts. So each time there's been a change, it's quite natural that these places become what the people inside them are. And in some ways, the people become what the museum has been or has to offer. So there's always that mix. And that's fascinated me, because you can see how things change and how values from one person and one era can not be needed or respected by another era. They've got their own ways. And I think that's part of our museum realm that isn't talked about a lot or recognized a lot. But certainly any of us that work in these places know very well the personalities, especially the strong ones, of certain museums, and the character takes on their interests.
What are some of the strengths of the Vernon Museum?
And the place is known as the Greater Museum, the Greater Vernon Museum and Archives. So Greater Vernon means it's the region around, which is appropriate because we have a regional district with several independent communities, all of which one would call Vernon. So Greater Vernon was a way of being inclusive of these outer communities. The strength in Vernon certainly is the archive. The archive is incredibly well organized. It's been a continuing focus, even from the times that I was mentioning of the early director who was so archivally interested. the people after him have continued to build on it with all the modern facilities. So as soon as computer and databases were available, they had a digital, one of the first archival systems in Vernon. And in fact, the company that was had made it and was selling it at that time gave Vernon a break because it could be used as a test. And so feedback was given to the community about the effectiveness and they could modify the program. In the museum side, like most museums in throughout British Columbia, there's a lot of stuff from the early 1900s. There was a change in the 1960s when I started working with, or 1970s when I started working with the museum. We were starting to talk about more recent decades and also about in the museum realm at that time, we began talking about the progress of history and preserving what's present and realizing when we look back at the historic realms and artifacts and archives available, there are things we wish had been preserved. For example, while I was working at the museum in 1984, we put together a Through the Decades exhibit with 15 cases. They were big display cases. And each one had a decade, stuff from a decade. Well, it was really easy to do the early 1900s. And then when we got up to the 1950s, I thought those of us who had lived through the 50s thought, what were the iconic elements? One of the things we thought was hula hoops. Well, there were no hula hoops to be seen anywhere. And yet any of us that were in that, had lived in that era would know how common hula hoops were. It was a good example of, oh, let's make sure we collect now. And that kind of happened in the museum realm. And so the sense of preserving history of the moment began to occur.
You say, looking at the collection, what are some elements that you feel are missing or some histories of Vernon that you want to see more expressed through the Vernon Collection?
So this last winter, we began a deaccessioning process in order to, one, look after things better that we did have, and two, create space to bring things in to keep the collection active. So in terms of Vernon, marvelous collection of stuff from the first couple decades of the 1900s. What I'd like to see is more that we come up with a plan, which we don't have at this time. And I've come up with a plan of what would we like to see collected and to consult with people about it. The aspect that I've really come to appreciate is group mind think. It would be easy for me or any individual to come up with a plan. And what I've often seen is that that ends up becoming so personal that there's a lot of other stuff that doesn't get looked at. And also the different functions of the museum. Yeah. So there's collecting and preserving the artifacts. There's also education. And there's a real need to set up a difference at times, like an education collection, justify having certain things that, that if the mandate is we only collect local Vernon material, then an example was in the deaccession process, there was a beautiful little case that was full of butterflies from Africa. Mm. And so, of course, that's going to go. But as an educator, I said, no, let's move it over to an let's create an education collection. And we have ways that we can link butterflies in Vernon with butterflies in the world. That connection, to me, the education collections offer the opportunity to go beyond. At the Vernon Museum, we've gone through a big change right now in use of space, and it's based on this. So the museum used to have cases throughout it, and things as different people had ideas, they'd put together an exhibit on that idea, and sometimes it had changed and sometimes not. To meet the modern needs, what we've done is to consolidate all the exhibits into about half of the space, or a little more, but roughly half. And so they're more dense, and they're, if anything, I think more interesting because of that. Yeah. The space that we opened up, we call now the community hall, and it's a place for sharing the community in many, many ways. So we've had concerts there, demonstrations by things like the Vernon Girls Trumpet Band, and, lots of different and book lectures and book launches and all sorts of things that nobody else in town is doing. So in a sense, we're celebrating the present and documenting it as we go. Mm-hmm. And leaving a record for the future through these documentations. So it's becoming history and celebrating what is the present right alongside of what was the past. So anybody that comes in has these historic exhibits to look at, and now there's things that are relevant to today's life. And so we're making the connection in that way as well.
What's your process of creating an exhibition? Are there any exhibitions that you have in mind to put together in next couple of months, next couple of years?
Through operating the historic site and building up to a staff of 15, what I discovered was the power of group mind and group thinking. And I tried to put that into practice every way I can ever since. And I learned to put the topic on the table. And it might not come out to be my choice, but that wasn't the important thing. The important thing was it was a choice that was universally applicable and meaningful. One that I'm working with right now. So those cases I designed and built back in the 1980s, still in the museum today, they're just like new. There's a need to bring First Nations engagement into our topics today, in part through the reconciliation attitude and process, in part just because it's part of history. It's the right thing to do. I've taken all those cases, there were 10 of them, and I'm arranging them in a circle with a reading table in the middle, two entries. One entry is from the main museum body and the other leads into the new nature gallery that we're just developing right now. And then I'm engaging with Native elders to come up with the topics and how to present, what to present. And I've seen a couple of different examples. Kamloops had a magnificent example put together by a lady named Linda Jules, who was the wife of the chief at the time. And Linda was a museum person who married into the band. Linda, they gave her a room in the residential school building to become a museum. And what she did was divide the room in half and with an open at each end. And one side was the old way and the other side was the new way. The old side had the stone tools and the baskets and the things that from of true historic artifacts. The new way is a picture of a family having a barbecue. A man driving a pickup truck who's a logger. And it was done with respect for everybody and everything. But it really did say, we are here. We have been here. We are still here. It was very inexpensive and low key, but to me it was incredibly meaningful. So anyway, I've gathered together a couple of elders to really advise and co-create this. And the first, one of the first sit down talks about it that we had, I pointed out the opening to the nature gallery and how I really wanted things to tie together if possible. One of the elders just sat back and smiled and he said, well, you know, from our point of view, there isn't any difference. It's all the same. It's brilliant, you know, and working with people like that is such a joy. And then with the 10 cases, I didn't have any specific way it should come together. I really opened up his discussion. The elder began to mention stories. He said, well, there's these rocks down by Okanagan Falls, and the story is these rocks happened because of this and that, and there was a story. And he said, really, there's stories about all these things, and so each case could maybe be a story. And so we thought, well, that's great, and there's certainly more than 10 stories. Wouldn't that be nice if we've developed a story for each? We can even engage different people to help with them and make sure that it meets their needs as well as my needs and our needs in the museum. But we could keep it going. So we'll do the 10 and then we'll do number 11. That means one of the 10 has to go. And so we can keep vitalizing the place by slowly making change, gleaning new knowledge, make an archive, a reference of what has been.
The future of the museum, where do you see it in 5 years, 10 years? What are some aspirations that you have for its future?
In Vernon, there's a fascinating situation at the moment. A referendum was held to build a new museum and art gallery and passed. This was a year ago, year and a half ago. Everything was going quite wonderfully in the museum. We thought, okay, we've got at least a couple of years before the building's up, maybe 3 years. Gives us an opportunity to use the existing building, which is quite solid and nice, to experiment. And so decide, but through practical experiment, keep it going. what works? What are people interested in? How can we draw different audiences? What will make a difference in town? And so we thought, here's this opportunity to experiment. So we don't have to just make the exhibit that's going to be there for the next 50 years. And we were embarking on that. And that's when the community hall emerged as a practical experiment. And then COVID hit.
Right.
So we were a month and a half, 2 months into the process, and things were starting to click. And then we had to shut down. In the meantime, I've been working making exhibits. We have an opportunity right now where I can work in solitude and build some exhibits, which are going to be part of the experiment. Now, it's put off, what it's done, though, is put off the timing for the new building. So we may be in our existing place longer. But as far as the future goes, the discussions we were having were around the combination of public discussion, public evaluation of what's going on in life. It could be a focal point for community conversation. Because the museum, any museum, has a reputation of being a neutral space, it would be ideal to build on that opportunity. Here's a neutral space where you can simply talk about things with people of diverse interests. At the same time, we really want to show more of the diversity that Vernon has had through its years. There were other parts. There was a Chinatown that happened after the railway, as happened in many places. Mm. And significant Chinese community here. There was a military camp. People of Ukrainian heritage were interred during the war, became a prisoner of, well, not a prisoner of war, but an internment camp. So all kinds of diverse history that we should bring out as a museum. It's the right thing, not just the English. And that's definitely happening right now as we try and evaluate, having programs now, engaging diverse cultural communities to come to the museum, have their celebration here. Now, along with that, I'm hoping will come collecting of artifacts, sharing of archival information, documenting the communities more, and engaging them in the conversations. So that's kind of the future of the place. It becomes partly objects to revere and preserve toward whatever the unknown future might find interesting. And the other is the community hall, a place to collect information and to preserve as well in its own way.
Well, Kyler, thank you very much for taking the time to sit down and speak with me about the museum, and all the best.
Well, thanks for your patience. It's a fascinating project, and I really appreciate what you're doing.